M. Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
An Ohio jury has ordered a woman to pay damages to a football player that she had accused of rape.
Cleveland.com reports a civil jury has found a woman liable for malicious prosecution in a rape allegation she made against former Ohio State football standout Garyon Conley more than 5 years ago. The accusation against Conley came shortly before the 2017 NFL draft, in which he had been projected to be a high first-round pick. The 23-year-old woman alleged that he had sexually assaulted her in a Cleveland hotel room. Conley's attorney said the sex was consensual. He asked for just $300 in damages. The jury agreed. I'm Norman Hall.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to return to office. Some wonder if he'll use the opportunity to push legislation to erase some of his legal troubles. Netanyahu is on trial for corruption. I'm Jackie Quinn, AP News.
Everybody.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Collada of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show, and we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Slip the coffee check. Talk to doctor now and share.
I get-
get it, slip it, cuff it, check it twice a day.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it in the morning and before dinner.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it, and share it with my doctor. Nearly 1 in 2 U.S. adults have high blood pressure. That's why it's important to self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. It starts with a monitor.
Now that I know my blood pressure numbers, I talked with my doctor. We're getting those numbers down.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check. Talk to doctor now and share.
Be next to talk to your doctor about your blood pressure numbers. Get down with your blood pressure. Self-monitoring is power. Learn more at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association. In partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Look through your children's eyes, and you will discover the true magic of a forest.
Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the happier, happy hour, the Friday Eve edition, Dominic. We got a fine guest right from the top. He is former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis on Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media Network, James Santel. Jim, welcome back to the, some say the greatest show ever, but my perhaps God. Second to Morning Cannolis.
Hey, Jim.
We'll fight that out at some other venue, but for today, delighted to be with you as always, both of you.
Well, Jim, I want to start with the breaking headline of the day. Brittany Griner has been released from Russian custody, apparently in exchange for a convicted arms dealer. And Jim, I realize there are many, many considerations when these sort of deals are made, and there's a lot of political pressure being put on the administration. I'm not sure that I see this as fair exchange of value, Jim, but we're talking about human lives. Happy that she's returning to the United States. But want to get your opinion, counselor, on this exchange.
Right. All of those things are true. First and foremost, wonderful to have an American citizen coming back home. I understand she's going to be undergoing some health care, which is of some concern, but nonetheless anticipating her return uneventfully and returning to family and friends and to her spouse and others here. So that's the top headline news. That's great to see. When I was in Iraq, from time to time, I confronted some of these issues, not nearly at this high a level, but you recognize in those settings that there is a great deal of diplomacy that goes into all of this. And some very, very, very difficult decisions have to be made inside the State Department, certainly inside the White House, about balancing those interests that you've just described. Not entirely certain, along with you, that this is a fair trade, if you will, in terms of the nature of the kinds of things that the Russian defendant committed in this nation, compromising our security with what Brittany Griner may have done there in Russia, having to do with a vial in her pack, her backpack. Nonetheless, again, in the diplomatic sphere, lots of difficult choices made. This is plainly one of them, appropriate for us to debate in America under the First Amendment, but nonetheless, a difficult thing. I have no doubt there were many people inside the administration who were articulating all sorts of views in all sorts of directions about how to get this done. Timing is also important, too. At some point, you realize you've got to bring this to a conclusion. And so time is also significant. lots of things. It's not related to this, but also note, for example, that the State Department recently told a federal district court judge that that in the Jamal Khashoggi trial, that the Crown Prince in Saudi Arabia should have immunity. That, too, a very difficult State Department decision to make. Probably the right one in terms of policy, but boy, it certainly strikes an awful lot of people as difficult to swallow.
Dom, if you want in here, I'll let you in because I've got other mini topics.
I mean, with Brittany Griner, I guess I agree, Jim, totally. I'm just happy she's home. Was it an equitable trade in the sense that this guy was a super scumbag and Brittany Griner was just playing ball with a little weed? I mean, in that context, no. But the dude did do like 10 years. You know, I mean, it's not like he got off scot-free. And you got someone's got to make a decision. And yes. if it was a decision to either this is a swap or no deal, you know, I think I'd have made the same decision. I'd rather have something than nothing.
And that's not a close question. You've got to do something about this. Had to bring her home in some manner. And as I said, time is also of the essence here. You don't want her there forever and need to make that very tough judgment call in the end.
Jim, why don't you talk about the January 6th commission and their pondering whether or not to bring criminal charges. And my impression of your tweets that you were not very fond of that, Jim. And I think you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, if you're the J6. But I wanted to get your sense. Where do you stand on how wise it might be for the J6 to bring a criminal referral?
And Jim, they have named names. My understanding, the named names that they have put out there publicly are Mark Meadows,
all right,
John Eastman, Jeffrey Clark, and former President Donald Trump.
All right.
And Rudy Giuliani, I believe, was on that list as well.
Okay. And that's interesting. I had not heard that before, but taking notes on all those, one of my, not concerns, but just my observations that have been a part of my communications with you and others is just this. We know that the Department of Justice, when it comes to January 6th, all the work that's being done in front of those grand juries, all the other things that are going on right now, Department of Justice does not need to have a criminal referral from the United States Congress. If I go and rob a bank, the head of Chase Bank or BMO does not need to call up the FBI and say, hey, there's been a bank robbery. Could I refer this matter to you? There's been a crime. And so those investigations go on. So part of my response is it's not absolutely necessary that there be referral made. I understand the public attention to this and the notion that Congress, yes, is making findings, if you will, about criminal exposure. What I wonder aloud here on in real time as you identify those names is whether these are criminal referrals based once again upon contempt. Because all those folks that you just listed, Mike, have obviously gotten subpoenas and have cooperated to greater and lesser degrees, mostly lesser degrees. We know already from the past that Steve Bannon's been convicted for that, Peter Navarro coming up for trial. Mark Meadows in the past prosecuted upon a referral, but it may well be that those referrals could be the focus of those names. And in that case, there is a very specific statute that permits the Congress to make those referrals, and it's required that they do so. And so if the referrals are premised upon contempt charges, terrific. That is good. That is based upon obviously what the House committee itself has not gotten from them in terms of testimony and documents. And again, as I look at that list, all of them fall in the category of people with whom they have had outreach and attempts to get information, presumably not successful to this point. My only small observation is that when it comes to larger issues, if you are charging ultimately Donald Trump with seditious conspiracy related to January 6th, to use the language of the recent convictions and the trials coming up, you don't need the Congress to do that. The United States Department of Justice can go ahead under the federal criminal code and identify all those things. And everybody else, including Jeffrey Clark, arguably Mark Meadows, certainly Eastman, putting together this memorandum, you don't need a criminal referral from the Congress to say, hey, this fellow engaged in an awful lot of activity here. But again, if it's about contempt, then you do.
And Jim, has Donald Trump been subpoenaed specifically by the J6? Has he? To your knowledge, is that also so he would fulfill that criteria? As
he would be, yes. Yeah, they did vote the last time they convened, and I believe his attorneys have said they've accepted that subpoena. Presumably there have been, who knows, discussions about that. Not going to happen in the next 10 days. And so there may say, listen, even in our few days that have happened since we have subpoenaed him, we have not gotten a level of cooperation that we need. And so include him on that list of people for whom contempt should be considered by the department. Plainly, Donald Trump should be considered for an awful lot more than just contempt, as serious as that matter is.
Jim, let's talk about the matter of contempt in regards to the Mar-a-Lago documents. The Department of Justice, the special counsel, talked about moving forward with contempt against the Trump team. What does this mean, Jim? Is it their disdain, the fact it took them months to drag these documents out, the fact there continue to be classified documents popping up in storage sheds? Where do you think the contemptuous part is, Jim?
Right, right. Again, how long is the list here? We know from the history of this, this began well over a year ago with the with NARA figuring out that we don't have the documents that we should normally have in the wake of a presidency, and then multiple requests for it. We have in particular, again, letters requests that may or not be a basis for contempt. We've got a grand jury subpoena that we recall predated the search in early August, and a response to that that may have been middling and not complete. That could be the predicate for a finding of contempt of the grand jury, not complying with that. Representations made that we produced everything, those done, again, in connection with a court proceeding, the grand jury proceeding, that plainly turned out not to be the truth. We've got a little bit more difficulty there in determining the extent to which that was done intentionally or based upon what Donald Trump simply said. That could be an issue. We know as well, and this is where it really becomes significant, that in the portion of the affidavit in support of the August search warrant, there was that reference to obstruction of justice, right? It was just a one passing phrase, not a whole lot otherwise disclosed, all the rest of that presumably redacted. But there too, if there has been obstruction, that's obviously a criminal charge, a criminal event, but that can also partake of contempt. Contempt of the process, contempt of court, arguably, depending upon what other things are out there that we don't even know about. So there is a number of different possibilities here, given not only the continued discovery of more documents, but the representations and non-representations made by counsel, lack of compliance, lack of communication, all those kinds of things can also be the basis for contempt inside that very multifaceted proceeding.
Jim, if there were indictments dropped by the special counsel in the Mar-a-Lago case, let's say, for example, the paperwork crimes, how long, in your opinion, counselor, would it take to work its way into the courts to the point where we could have conviction? Because, of course, this man is an active candidate for the U.S. presidency, or so he claims. Jim, we could easily be beyond the point of a national election, could we not?
You could very easily do that. Again, this probably falls in one of those categories, again, where perhaps a different type of justice delivered to all of us as opposed to a former president. Let's suppose that there is an indictment issued on January 2nd. There is a thing called the Speedy Trial Act that requires that there be a trial within 70 days. Is that uniformly recognized? No, but judges have to make findings about complexity of the case. They've got to make findings about discovery, all kinds of things. You know, maybe the Mar-a-Lago case, while there certainly is a lot of documentary evidence out there, it may not be that there is a huge basis for a continuance and for extensions of time. But realistically, an indictment, let's say in January, it's possible you could schedule a trial, say, by midsummer. Unlikely, perhaps. Then you've got post-trial motions. You've got sentencing, which follows months after that. You've got an appeal after that, presumably to the D.C. Circuit Court, presumably to the Supreme Court. All of that gets you very, very close to January 20th of 2025.
That doesn't feel like swift justice. Come back more with James Santel, our good friend and fine radio host.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show, and we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Cloudy skies tonight with lows around 30. Northerly winds around 5 miles an hour. Daytime highs approaching 37. Tomorrow, overcast. Cloudy skies again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 32. Overcast Tuesday with highs around 40. 43, chance for scattered rain showers Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Hite. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
Get a great FN criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis on Saturdays, joins us. Jim, thanks for sticking around. On the multitude of issues, saw during the break here that Mike Flynn testified in Fulton County today on that particular case. Finally got into a grand jury about an hour, and according to the reporting of the Washington Post, there are several issues they initially wanted to talk to Flynn about regarding overturning the election, including martial law, seizing voting machines, you know, those kinds of things. Jim, one of many investigations still moving forward. In any sense on where Fulton County is sitting on this one right now?
Sure. And that one may well be just as far along as anyone out there. This is Fannie Willis, once again, the DA in Fulton County, who announced very early on that she is initiating this investigation, not just with respect to the former president's statement that he needs 11,280 votes. That was the thing that prompted all this. You could probably charge him tomorrow for that those comments made, that request made to the Secretary of State there. She is plainly indicated and referenced again by the fact that Mike Flynn is there, maybe testifying, maybe not testifying a whole lot in 1 hour today. But she is plainly looking beyond that, all focused once again on Georgia, right? What is it that all these people did to affect the Georgia election? That's what she's got jurisdiction over. So it's not the entire country, but it does include all the laundry list of things we've talked about, false electors, the Eastman memorandum, all those kinds of things. And the fact that Mike Flynn is there is a confirmation of the breadth of her look at this as well. I have not yet seen the reporting on the timing of this. My guess is if Mike Flynn was there for a whopping 1 hour in all those areas, probably a lot of invocation of what we call the Fifth Amendment Constitution. And so I would expect that he can do that, but probably not not a very productive afternoon for her or for the members of the special grand jury there in Atlanta.
Well, they got him on the record. One other one before I kick it back over to Crudy. Alvin Bragg, Trump Organization, Trump Payroll Corporation, guilty, 17 charges of various criminal fraud. Alvin Bragg sat back on this. As we know, we've been critical to some degree, Jim. What's your sense now? I kind of thought as we saw this unfold that maybe he was just sitting back. He wants to make sure, you know, dots his I's, crosses T's. If the corporations are now found to be, you know, criminal enterprises, let's say, well, now that he can look at some of these other issues within those corporations, perhaps, and tie it to Donald Trump, which apparently the prosecutors specifically said at closing arguments that they have irrefutable proof that Donald Trump was involved in this. What's your take on Alvin Bragg's position as of now?
Sure. And I think there's something very much to that, Dom. We saw during the course of this trial that Donald Trump's name is on checks, right, written to people, that he is, his initials are on memorandums internal to his own companies there. And so in some sense, this may well have been again, it's very significant in terms of criminal conviction of the companies. We can chat more about the implications of that, but not to make this just about a test run, but plainly, one of the concerns is whether or not somebody like Alan Weisselberg would be credible in front of a jury. And plainly, this jury found unanimously that if not completely credible, he was, and they found the overall corroboration of his testimony compelling as well. So Alvin Bragg now looks at this and says, gee, I've got a conviction of the CFO. I've got a huge conviction of the corporation itself. I'm going to prevent them from doing many, many things as a convicted entity out there. And I've got an awful lot of evidence that plainly the jury looked at and said, yes, that's credible. And he has said recently that the matter really means open as to others, including the former president. And so we don't know what is on his agenda. We know early on there were a couple of those prosecutors who left out of frustration that they were perhaps not permitted to go ahead with this. But again, we don't know all the insides on that. And so there is some reason to believe that he will continue to go down that road. Again, his focus on New York state criminal charges, not federal. That's also a companion to up the street with the state attorney general, civil matter involving valuations and other financial issues there. $250 million request, an attempt to shut the Trumps out of any future supervisory roles in corporations. Lots of things going on in New York. This was a big one. The corporation conviction is huge.
Counselor, I apologize for my partner. Keep bringing up Alvin Bragg, wasting your time, sir. We are the Devil's Advocates. He is Jim Santel. He is the host of Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network, Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock. And Jim, I've heard you discuss the case that was heard before the U.S. Supreme Court this week. Moore v. Harper, that effectively would throw a lot of power to state legislatures. And the one here is very gerrymandered. We don't want that. We want state courts to retain their power. Jim, how do you think these arguments went? Have you been able to review any of the oral arguments?
I did. I listened to a little bit of it and certainly saw some of the other comments out there. And this is, again, fascinating for America. Maybe a little bit more reason tonight to sleep a little bit better than we would have otherwise, maybe 48 hours ago. This is the way it's playing out. Again, this concept, the independent state legislature doctrine, it truly is, as I've said in other settings, this is the legal version of the moon is hollow and JFK is still alive. This is just craziness when it comes to changing the way in which we vote and decisions made about that, who makes the rules. We've talked about that before. As to the Supreme Court and your specific inquiry, it looks as if we've got a horse race here. Plainly, we've got four members of the Supreme Court, the so-called conservatives, who probably will buy into this, again, completely refuted theory. But we do have John Roberts probably joining the so-called three liberals. So you've got 4-4. And who is the justice who's sort of right in the middle, also suggesting subtly, but clearly, that she's got some concerns about that? Wait for it. Her name, Amy Coney Barrett, and she may be the deciding factor in this. And so she's the one who, again, is expressing skepticism, probably would vote with John Roberts and the liberals saying, no, we're not going to do this. And so maybe we'll see in June not quite the disaster that we were anticipating and still are concerned about when it comes to the adoption of this crazy, crazy theory that changes the way in which America goes ahead.
Jim Santel, always appreciate when you come around. Always appreciate when you inform the audience on Saturday mornings. Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Jim, look forward to seeing you Saturday night at the party, my friend.
Yes, always a pleasure to be with you, gentlemen. Looking forward to the weekend as well. Take care, everybody.
Right on. Thank you, Jim.
Come back with us. We are the Devil's Advocates. Phone lines open, 844-96-2789.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page or Squarespace. or Google My Business or WordPress? But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. More details on Tuesday night's mass shooting that killed six in Chesapeake, Virginia. Our Mike Hempen has them.
Investigators say the Walmart supervisor who shot and killed six co-workers left behind what he called a death note. Andre Bing blamed others for mocking him and said he wishes his parents would have paid closer attention to his social deficits. Bing also said he did not plan the shooting, but that, quote, things just fell in place like I was led by the Satan, unquote. Co-workers who survived the shooting say he was known for being difficult and for being hostile with employees. Police say Bing legally purchased the 9mm gun he used the day of the killings. He had no criminal record. Bing died at the scene of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. I'm Mike Hempen.
Residents of Colorado Springs are reassessing things after last weekend's mass shooting at a gay nightclub. State Representative Leslie Harrod says she'd hoped the city would have aged out of hate.
Of transphobia, of racism, of homophobia. We're not going to just age out of it.
In fact, she says some are breeding it. Her answer?
We have to actively teach a new narrative. We have to actively embrace people who are different than us or those who are just like us and see us for who we are completely. Colorado Springs should lead that now.
In his nightly address, Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky says the number of people without power across the country has been halved, but that leaves 6 million still experiencing blackouts, the result of Russian strikes. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance's commitment to Ukraine is unwavering.
Allies are providing unprecedented military support, and I expect foreign ministers will also agree to step up non-lethal support.
COVID-19 numbers are trending upward in the U.S. The CDC's tracker shows cases and deaths on the rise. This is AP News.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. It gets better right now. We welcome back a fine guest, the U.S. Senator from the great state of Wisconsin, my senator. She is Tammy Baldwin. Tammy, welcome back.
It's great to join you again.
Well,
you,
happy holidays, Senator. Before we jump into the fun stuff, because this is something of a victory lap as I perceive it, but gotta bring up the day's headlines. We do our Friday grievances. Bear with me, Senator. I was still celebrating the Warnock victory in Georgia and the 51-49 math that cast, and the committee assignments that transfers through to the Democratic Party. And I see your colleague Kyrsten Sinema today has effectively declared herself a party of one. Tammy, practically, what does that mean to the Democratic majority in the Senate?
You know, I doubt it will end up having a lot of practical effect at all. We all knew that Kyrsten Sinema was a pretty independent type anyhow. And we have other independents, Angus King of Maine and Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who are declared independents but caucus with the Democrats. That's going to remain the case. And so I think her party change kind of reflects who she is. She was actually one of the senators that I worked most closely with in passing getting the bipartisan majority we needed to pass the Respect for Marriage Act recently. And she's very effective and helpful. And I expect to continue working with her on many issues to come.
Senator, we certainly want to talk about the Respect for Marriage Act. That's the victory celebration as I see it. The bill apparently will be signed into law. Dominic informed me President Biden expected to sign it on Tuesday. Tammy, will you be at the White House for that ceremony? And this, to my perception, Senator, might be the most important legislation you've shepherded through in your career. But you tell me about it. It's your turn to gloat.
Well, I plan on being at the signing ceremony. It should be, it should be wonderful. And I have to tell you that it was a hard fought process to get the Respect for Marriage Act passed in both houses. But what has been most touching to me is all the times that somebody's come up to me either during this debate or after it passed the Senate to say, this really matters to me and my family, and thank you for doing it. And I've had so many people tell me that they feel like this is one of the most relevant things that Congress have ever done that impacts their lives. And I am very moved by that. You know, in some ways, the Respect for Marriage Act, you know, it's sad that we even had to be bringing it up. The reason it was brought up was because this past summer, the Supreme Court decided that that Roe versus Wade should be overturned, that it was wrongly decided when it was decided nearly 50 years ago. And in an instant, we saw half of America become second-class citizens. But it was very clear when you start looking at that that Supreme Court opinion that this same activist court could well go after other cases that were decided along similar lines, whether those are the marriage cases banning or forbidding the banning of interracial marriage, or the marriage equality case, or access to contraception. I mean, there's a whole line of cases that were decided on similar constitutional and legal grounds as Roe versus Wade that were in jeopardy. And people were scared that after fighting for decades to be able to protect their families through marriage, that this could go away in the future. So when the Respect for Marriage Act is finally signed into law, people will be able to rest easier knowing that they can still protect their families.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin joining us. Senator, thank you. Congratulations. Many of us have gay family members and friends, and we certainly appreciate that. And it is a shame that we have to go through this seemingly again. There were some exceptions, some to my understanding, to allow for religious concerns. Senator, what exactly did that look like? How did that change the bill? And how did the Republicans eventually come along as you shepherded this bill?
Yeah, so we originally introduced the bill earlier in the year, but as it appeared that we had a real good chance of passing it with a filibuster-proof margin in the United States Senate, I started having conversations with a number of Republicans who I thought for the very same reasons you celebrate it, you know, they have family and friends and staff members who are in same-sex relationships and marriages, and they want to see them flourish and want to see those rights continue. But I was talking to people, and there were a number of folks who raised concerns. In many cases, those concerns weren't necessarily threats. So, for example, there was a request to create clarity that polygamous marriages were not going to become legal. And, you know, if we can clarify that, we're happy to clarify that. In addition, I think it was really important to say that the Respect for Marriage Act really maintains the status quo with regard to laws affecting religious liberties. It changes them in no way. And if putting clarity in the bill so that perhaps a Republican member who is getting a lot of heat from home from certain folks, you know, can just point to the bill and say, I worked with the sponsors to get this change so we could clarify that issue. And that gets their vote. That's really important. And I will say that because of our efforts, extensive efforts, really careful efforts, we ended up winning the endorsement of some major religious organizations that I think not so many years ago, you couldn't imagine that the Mormon Church, for example, would endorse the Respect for Marriage Act, or the Orthodox Jews, or the evangelicals, one of the groups of evangelicals. But indeed, that ended up happening, as well as obviously the civil rights organizations. So it was a lot of hard work, but we really did reach clarity so that people, enough Republicans could become comfortable to move forward with this measure.
Our fine guest, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Tammy, Mike Gallagher from Republican, from right here in the great state of Wisconsin, Green Bay area, he effectively changed his vote from summer until now. He evolved on this issue, and he expressed the specific clauses regarding polygamy and religious freedoms as the reason why. Brian Stile joined him, one other Republican from Wisconsin. But your colleague Ron Johnson voted against, as did every other Republican congressional member from the state of Wisconsin. Does that mean Republicans have no respect for marriage? How do you take this, Tammy?
Well, here's where I begin. Public opinion has changed dramatically in recent decades. I mean, this. The vote that we got was unimaginable even a decade ago, before the Supreme Court decided the Obergefell case in 2015, declaring marriage equality the law of the land. Some of my Republican colleagues have been impacted by those in their lives and those among their constituents who are in marriages, worried about whether the Supreme Court might overturn marriage equality at some point, and wanted to get to yes. At the same time, they wanted to be able to tell constituents of faith communities in their states that they had safeguarded religious liberties in the process. Other colleagues of mine didn't want to get to yes. And so, you know, I think we offered a number of opportunities for others to offer amendments. But in the end, they didn't come forward and offer language to address their concerns. And so I can't speak for them, but I do know that I was pleased that enough of my Republican colleagues wanted to get to yes on respect for marriage.
Senator, not to rest on your laurels, still doing more work. The Reproductive Health Travel Fund Act. We talked about Roe v. Wade as kind of the impetus for this and the court's reaction and their comments on how some of these other cases could be looked at. What are you attempting to solve? What's your point? What are you trying to do here with this Reproductive Health Travel Fund Act?
Well, let's take Wisconsin as the perfect example of this. When Roe versus Wade was struck down, Wisconsin has a law still on the books. It was passed in 1849. Yes, everyone heard me correctly. 1849, 1 year after Wisconsin became a state, is a criminal abortion ban. And the only exception is for the life of the mother. I've been hearing such heartbreaking stories about what that has meant for reproductive health care access and abortion care access for women in Wisconsin. I've heard of at least well, I've heard several cases where a woman had to bleed excessively, or her fever had to go to perilous levels before she could get care in the state of Wisconsin because her life was in danger. And we also know that we are surrounded by states that have different laws. They don't have laws that were passed in 1849. And in fact, abortion care is available in Illinois, in Minnesota, and other states in the area. The travel fund is a way to help women in Wisconsin who have, you know, become second-class citizens, like half of America has, have access as they did before, and make it not so expensive or cumbersome that they cannot access comprehensive reproductive health care. And that means a travel fund, and it means allowing grants to organizations that try to facilitate access.
Senator, codification of Roe v. Wade seems unlikely under the current makeup of the U.S. Senate. As a voter in Wisconsin, I got a 20-something daughter. She would like to return here someday and have reproductive rights. Is it the state Supreme Court? Is that the remedy for Wisconsin women, for Wisconsin voters, as you would see it, Senator?
It's a key piece moving forward. And I want to just say, I think about how long the opponents of Roe versus Wade plotted to get to this point where after nearly 50 years, it would be overturned. It is not going to be a straight line. It is not going to be a short-term effort to restore women of America to, equal rights and first-class citizenship. But one of the pieces since the overturning of Roe versus Wade means that you follow the law in each state. Having a Supreme Court in Wisconsin that would scrutinize that 1849 statute and see whether it is still valid under our state constitution and federal constitution. Those are ways in which we might provide some relief in a shorter term. But this is going to be a long battle, just as the battle to secure reproductive rights were to begin with. This is going to be a long battle to restore them.
Senator, your team tells us we have a few more minutes. Excellent. More with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. More Devil's Advocates, the Friday edition. Stick around.
Thank you.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Our guest is Kristen Elfheim, who is the state Senate candidate for District 19 in the Fox Valley.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
There are really good people that have been in Madison on both sides. And if we're not letting the strongest problem solvers win, we're making a mistake.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org, and in 3 minutes, you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Lows level off around 30 tonight under cloudy skies. Northerly winds around 5 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 37. Lows level off around 32. Tomorrow night, cloudy. Overcast skies Tuesday with highs around 40. 43, chance for scattered rain showers Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Make you sweat, gonna make you groove.
Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine program, please go online to civicmedia.us. You can listen to podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, we got a fine guest. She's sticking around for us. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin from the great state of Wisconsin. Tammy, appreciate you sticking around. I want to talk a few issues. Heard a lot about the inflation in the midterms. Now, I drive up the road here, University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin. Gas is under $3 a gallon. Gas, obviously, the cost of transportation ripples through the entire economy. New studies, economic studies I see out today say effectively we do not have a wage cost spiral, meaning that higher wages drive up costs, drive up wages, drive up costs. That is not happening, at least not in the current sense. So as I understand it, Tammy, effectively the current inflation is a result of higher profits. Inflation equals profits. Senator, do you agree with the economic assessments I'm seeing of late?
I certainly see that in certain sectors, not necessarily across the board. But I take your example of the price at the pump. It seems like big oil has had very handsome profits in the time where we've seen the price at the pump go up so much. And, you know, there's a number of just recently we voted to avert a rail strike. I look at what those freight rail almost monopolies, but they're not quite monopolies. I look at what they've raked in at a time when they've been cutting their workforce and working them to the bone. There are certain sectors of our economy where it just appears there's been price gouging and profiteering because they could, and that it wasn't necessitated because of the laws of supply and demand. Now, granted, let's take the price at the pump. I certainly expect when there's a big shock to the system that we're going to see a fluctuation in price. So, for example, when Russia invaded Ukraine and we were trying to get the world to stop buying Russian oil, there was a fear that it would be a significant supply shortage. I can understand why it would go up a bit, but when that evened out because we were tapping the strategic petroleum reserve and we were creating more biofuels and ethanol to fill in the gap, they shouldn't have stayed that high. So I think we have to empower our Federal Trade Commission to be able to investigate price gouging. Right now, they think they lack the authority to do that. And if we're going to protect consumers and also hold these big corporations accountable, we have to have more effective oversight.
Tammy, we've seen a rapid spiking of interest rates, yet we see continued hiring in the economy. Employers don't hire unless they think they can expand profits. It seems like it's the American consumer, probably their buying power, at least through the housing market, Tammy, that are going to be squeezed the worst. I am fearful of the perhaps remedy the Fed's using here. Do you have any concerns about the raising interest rates?
You know, I do. I think that we would certainly be better off if that if the increases tapered down. But I would also say that the tools that they have to fight inflation are blunt instruments. it is not something, you know, they have a limited number of tools at their disposal. They're trying to keep inflation in check. And we're not going to see this sort of cause and effect because, again, it's a blunt instrument.
Senator, back to the oil for just a moment. I did notice yesterday Bloomberg reported that Exxon raised its annual buyback by about 10% to, what, $50 billion stock buyback after it posted its highest profit in its 152-year history. Your colleague, Senator Sanders, has proposed a windfall tax for those kinds of things. Is that something that you would support? And if so, if not, whatever, is how realistic is something like that in today's political environment?
Yeah, well, let me tell you my proposal, which is to stop stock buybacks. You know, they were not available to corporations prior to the early 1980s. It was viewed as insider trading. I mean, think about it. You're the corporation, you know what's happening, and you then announce that you're going to buy back your own stock. It's obviously something that is, it's able to manipulate both the price of the stock, but also so many of the executives are compensated through stock. So I just think it's something that should be abolished. I've introduced legislation that would go back to those days where they weren't able to do it except in the narrowest of circumstances. And also, the other part of that measure allows workers to elect people to the board of directors of corporations. Maybe they would make decisions not to buy back stock, but instead make decisions that think about the workers and the communities in which they exist. And I'm not against dividends, by the way, but stock buybacks are another creature altogether. That's the direction I'd go in, but I certainly applaud any legislative action to rein in this this practice.
Senator, less serious. Any plans for the holidays? Home for the holidays, hopefully, Senator?
Well, that depends on the schedule of the Congress of the United States. I have been in this institution when we worked to Christmas Eve and then worked to New Year's Eve. It was very very sad, with Grinch-like. But I do hope to be home. And I also hope that we get our work done in a timely manner. And I am very much looking forward to Christmas and New Year's and time in Wisconsin.
Do you think Kevin McCarthy will ever be Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I know he has to navigate his own minefield, but I think it's probably going to happen.
Final. Senator, in the last 60 seconds, my understanding there might be some push for legislation here before the end of the year. One of those topics, legalizing weed banking for those that are involved in the cannabis industry. What's your sense on that?
Well, it's certainly an active part of our discussions in the year end, the SAFE Act. It causes for those states that have legalized recreational use, it is actually unsafe to have to be in a totally cash economy. And we're seeing some unfortunate consequences of that. I think it's a possibility. I do think there's a lot of Republican opposition. And so I'm not sure that it's going to sneak in before the end of the year.
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Thank you so much for joining us on The Devil's Advocates.
Thank you, Senator.
And back at you. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
Thank you.
Thank you for standing watch. Thank you for doing so much good for this country.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis.
Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.